there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in, everybody. Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. TireRack.com will help you get there. An unmatched selection, fast free shipping, free road hazard protection, and over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Sunday, noon Eastern, NBA playoffs about to tip off again in about an hour. First of all, Kerry Rhodes, man, how you doing?
Aaron, doing well, man. This is the first time with you, man.
I know.
So I worked the whole gauntlet, and now it's our turn.
A lot of pressure. I mean, you've worked with Martin Weiss. You've worked with Steve Hartman. I mean, I can't be worse than Steve Hartman. So that's it. That's an easy
Steve,
one.
Steve, I love you.
Well, Steve is probably driving. If I know Steve, he's probably listening.
He's probably driving in.
I think he does the show after us. Yeah. But, dude, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm excited to work with you. You know, NFL draft is coming up. Curious for your perspective on everything that's going to happen on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yep.
And do want to talk some other football. But as Isaac just told us, NBA playoffs last night, four games. All four games go to the home team. So I don't know that there was anything super surprising. As Isaac said, the Los Angeles Lakers have largely been owned by the Denver Nuggets, and that ends up being the nightcap there. The Knicks win, the Cavs win, and of course the Minnesota Timberwolves beat the Phoenix Suns. If I said to you, Kerry Rhodes, biggest takeaway, if there is one, out of day one of the NBA playoffs, what would you say it was?
I think the biggest takeaway is that Cleveland can be scary.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know they got a lot of good players, and they've been injured. You know, Donovan Mitchell's been in and out since, you know, post All-Star break. And so if those guys can stay healthy with Evan Mobley starting to pick his game up a little bit and play the way that he played last year with that supporting cast and the way that they can play defense, they could be fun to watch. And I think also with the Lakers, even though they got, you know, stretched out there a little bit at the end and the score looked a little worse than what it was, they played some good basketball. So if they can maintain that, maybe that can be a fun series.
They were up by three. You know, it's interesting. I did 3 hours last night in my normal spot. We really didn't talk much about Cleveland-Orlando.
Yeah.
So I'm curious for your perspective, because the thing about I just find the East to be very interesting.
Yeah.
Boston has obviously been to the finals, multiple conference finals, but it doesn't feel like anybody really has real faith that, like, are they really going to beat whoever comes out of the West? You know, they've been weird. They get to the finals. They kind of get embarrassed by Golden State a few years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, Milwaukee's a mess. We don't even know fully the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo going into today. Philly, obviously, Embiid coming off the injury. The Knicks with their own injury issues, even though they're the two seed. So you think there might be a nice little path here for Cleveland potentially?
Well, they're not going to beat Boston, but they could challenge Boston. They could give Boston the scare here, and I think, you know, Boston's going to need that. I mean, the East looks like a cakewalk for them.
Sure.
They play well. They've been head and shoulders above the rest when it comes to the competition out there. But again, Cleveland during the year had a big stretch where I think they were like 15 mm-hmm. in a row, right there during the middle of the season. If they can stay healthy and play well, it'd be an interesting series.
All right, so let's go to the Lakers really quick. Yep. Denver, Denver just owns this team, and obviously there was a lot of talk mm-hmm. late in the season. Could they have manipulated the schedule, whatever, where they didn't have to play Denver in round one? But, you know, it's crazy because you watch all four of these games, and honestly, I just feel like I feel like this is almost the least interesting one to talk about. Now, understanding that We're here in Los Angeles, TireRack.com studios. Lakers are the biggest brand in the NBA. We get all that. But it's like this game kind of went the way that I thought it would because honestly, I saw four of these literally the exact same game. I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say last year that four-game sweep, you know, the Lakers were essentially in every single one of those games. I was talking to producer Bo this morning, and it's like it just feels like there's that one, you know, 5 to 8 minute stretch where it's just like the Nuggets go on a run, the Lakers have no answers, and then they're playing catch up from there. And last night it was no different. You know, Lakers up by three at the half, and then they come out. And it's just like, you know, the light flips for Denver. They go on whatever run it was. They hold the Lakers to 18 points in the third quarter, outscoring by 14. And it's just like, you know, the Lakers cut it to 6-8 in the fourth quarter, but you never felt like they were going to get in. It just, I want to talk about the Lakers and LeBron throughout the show, but mm-hmm. it just feels like this team has the Lakers number. And does it go five? Does it go six? Does it go four? I don't know.
Right.
But I just don't see the scenario where the Lakers are, where the Lakers are kind of coming through, you know?
Well, Denver's been big time in the clutch. They have a two-man game that's just been pretty much unstoppable the last couple of years, right? And they have a better starting five. I mean, starting five just meaning, and not even skill-wise. I mean, I think the Lakers have a really pretty skilled starting five as well, but continuity
and the way that they
run, you know, their team and they run it through Jokic, man. It's just been unstoppable. But I mean, I'm not gonna push the Lakers to the side yet. I agree with you. It has kind of been up to par when it comes to those games. But you know, I find it hard to believe that the Lakers are going to get handled the way they did last year.
Really? What do you think the series ends up playing out like?
I think they're going to put some pressure on Denver, and I think it's going to be good for Denver. I'm not saying that Denver's going to lose this series. It's one of those things, the same when I talk about Boston, right? There's always going to be a series in the playoffs where you're going to be scared and you have to get over that hump to essentially get it done. And it can be as early as the first round for the Nuggets, because I think the Lakers are actually, when you talk about pieces fitting well, they've been playing really good basketball down the stretch.
Let me ask you about the Phoenix-Minnesota series, because that to me, if I had one big takeaway from day one of the NBA playoffs, mm-hmm. it was in that game, and it was frankly a little bit of confirmation bias. I get a lot of stuff wrong in this business. We all do, and we share, you know, big, strong opinions, whatever.
Right.
But I just bring it up because I saw the KD with two superstars thing with no bench. I saw that already.
We saw
it. It was 3 years ago in Brooklyn. Yeah. It didn't work then.
Right.
And I get, you know, Booker's probably got a little bit of a better head on his shoulders than Kyrie did at the time. James Harden's a little aloof. But, like, I just, you know, like when I go back to the day the Bradley Beal trade happened last summer and, you know, the internet, oh, my God, the new big three. Oh, what? And it's like, they have no bench. Like, what are we talking? Like, okay, it's cool. It's fun. This isn't fantasy basketball. And I think, you know, what was especially interesting to me about the reaction to it was coming off of the Denver run last year where, yes, Jokic is the star, Murray's the clear number two, but you're getting contributions from Michael Porter, you're getting contributions from Aaron Gordon, you're getting contributions from Bruce Brown at the time who was on the team, from Christian Brown off the bench.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I guess what I'm trying to say with Phoenix is, I don't. It's not going to work. Like, it's not going to work this year. I'm not enough of a capologist to figure out how they make it work. But what I saw last night, like, I think they're probably done in this series. But even if they're not,
yeah,
you basically need a great, great game. Not a good game. A great game from Kevin Durant and Devin Booker every single night. You look at last night, Devin Booker, 18 points, 5 of 16 from the field. Mm-hmm. He finishes with 18 points. You lose by 25. And so, by the way, Booker goes for 18. Even if he goes for 35, you still lose that game. It's like, that is my biggest takeaway, is the internet loved it the day that the new big three was formed in Phoenix. And what is it? It's like, you need a bench, you need depth. The Phoenix Suns bench, by the way, outside of 14 points from Royce O'Neal, combines for 4 points off the bench. It's done. I think it's been done since the day that trade happened. I've just never bought into this team, and maybe I'm overreacting to one game, but I don't see it.
I'm with you. I've never overreacted to that trade as well. I thought that trade wasn't going to put them over the hump. Seeing Bradley Beal, I watched a lot of him last year in Washington because because I Porzingis. So Porzingis is my guy, and being able to watch him and see how he was going to react in Washington. So I saw Bradley Beal. He's not a point guard, right? Mm-hmm. So you bring him in to run that show. That's not what he does.
Sure.
Watching him last year in Washington try to assume that position, even when John Wall left earlier, he was kind of slid to that position. Number one, he doesn't take care of the ball well. He's flashy with his handle. He can get hit shot, but he's not a facilitator, so to speak, right? So to put three guys in that system together who need to shoot the ball, it just didn't fit in the sense of structurally for those guys. And for that team to win, Booker has to be the alpha. Now, everybody kind of defaults to Kevin Durant, especially when it comes to the playoffs because of who he is.
Sure.
He's not that guy anymore. Obviously, he's one of the best scorers ever, and he still can score at an unbelievable clip. But for that team to win, and we saw them when they were winning, the structure of that team was totally different. We had a point guard where Chris Paul was able to facilitate and get Booker in the spots that he wanted the ball. Right now, Booker's trying to get to his spots without that. And that's what's causing the confusion with the organization of their offense. And so if Booker's not 1A in this situation, they're not going to have a chance. And so watching Minnesota and watching how structurally well put together they are, and the fact that they play defense, I don't see Phoenix having a chance either.
Yeah, that was one of those things where, it's like, and to your point is, if one of those three guys has the ball in his hands running the offense, and last year at times it was Booker, even when they had Chris Paul, it's like it takes away from what they do best. Really quickly, we were talking before the show actually about the NFL, wanting to play. Everyone wants to play GM this time of year in the NFL. Right. Do you think? And obviously we don't have all the cap numbers here, but this core is, they're going to have to try to figure it out with these three.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's something that they can do in the offseason? Because I look at it and I see an ascending Minnesota team, an ascending OKC team.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Nuggets are operating at the highest level. In the East, you can make fun of the East, but listen, Boston's here. They've arrived. By the way, even the Lakers, I just think the Lakers are better constructed as a roster.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's something they can do? Because it's just, I just feel like they sold their soul to get Kevin Durant. I get it. He's an all-time guy.
Yeah.
But there's just, I don't know what you can do to fix this thing in Phoenix.
Presently constructed, they have no shot to win. They're going to have to bring in a point guard. And I think one of those guys, and it'll probably be Bill, you have to go to the bench.
Sure.
And I think that works for them. And it may not work for him right now.
Sure.
But that would be the scenario that I see them having any success. They need a real point guard that can speed up the pace. Their tempo is really, it's kind of methodical as well, because they don't have a guy that can handle the show that way. So that, number one, but they got to get some players on the bench that can come in and contribute. I mean, you bring in a Bol Bol. And I know he's not a name where people are saying he should be playing or getting big minutes, but I know the kid can play. I don't know what it is, but him on the bench, Royce O'Neal, obviously, I mean, he's just very serviceable. He's an annoyance, and so you have a guy like that, but you got to get some points off the bench too.
And the other problem too for them is, I'm checking right now, but I'm pretty sure, they've traded all their draft picks to get those guys. So not that, college basketball is quite like college football, where you're going to get a lot of regular contributors. But even if there were those veteran guys that you could draft, kind of as cheap labor, for lack of a better term, don't think the Phoenix Suns have the draft capital to do it. So,
yeah.
Day one of the NBA is in the books. I think we both agree.
Suns are in trouble.
They're done. And so it'll be interesting. That to me was just, it was like jarring. It was like, and by the way, I remember I was on vacation last year when they were playing the Nuggets in the second. Who'd they play before the Nuggets? No, it must have been when they played the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. And it was like every night, Booker and Durant were going off 35 a pop, and they were still losing. And I was like, oh, so we're just going to add another guy, take away all the depth. And it was like, you know, listen, there's a lot of dumb people on the internet, myself included many times. Mm-hmm. But like that was one that I was just like, I don't see why everybody's excited. They lose by 25 to the Minnesota Timberwolves on Sunday. So Saturday. So Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes here in on a Sunday morning. We'll look ahead to the NBA schedule later, everything coming up. But what I do want to talk, Kerry, is a little bit more on the Lakers. Uh-huh. And as this team is constructed with a 39-year-old LeBron James, kind of the same thing. Do they have that ceiling? Maybe is Denver just a bad matchup for them, or can LeBron still do it at that level? We'll discuss that next. Should mention, by the way, Fox Sports Radio's Draft Night Live through the first round is this Thursday night beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern, presented by Express Pros, the official employment agency of Fox Sports Radio's draft coverage. Insider Jay Glazer, former Cardinals GM Steve Keim, College Football Hall of Fame LeVar Arrington, and Big Noon Kickoff's Rob Stone will have pick-by-pick predictions and reactions to every first-round pick. That's Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, through the entire first round of the draft, live right here on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app, presented by Express Pros.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Two NBA insiders podcasting twice a week to plug you right into the NBA grapevine.
All happening in only one place. This League Uncut, the new NBA podcast with me, Chris Haynes.
And me, Mark Stein.
Join us as we team up to expound on everything we're covering, hearing, and chasing.
Listen to This League Uncut with Chris Haynes and Mark Stein
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days,
ooh,
it would have been
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn. Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Radio. Aaron Torres and Kerry Rhodes broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. Four games in the books in the NBA playoffs. Four more today, starting at the top of the hour. Boston hosting Miami, the 8-1 matchup in the East. After that, Dallas Clippers, Indy, Milwaukee, and New Orleans, Oklahoma City is the nightcap. So, Kerry, I want to ask you this. We started with a lot of the, just kind of going through all four games yesterday, but I want to kind of hone in on the Lakers game because, you know, we talked a little bit about this a minute ago, but the Los Angeles Lakers, I thought that game, and I think you feel a little bit differently, but it was eerily similar, in my opinion, to the Western Conference Finals last year.
Right.
Where the Lakers, you know, they come out, game plan sharp, LeBron sharp, this and that. And then the Nuggets take their best punch. And then all of a sudden you look up and what was a 10-point lead or whatever is now a tie game. And then the Nuggets make their run. And then the Lakers don't just have enough juice. And I look at it. LeBron James finishes last night 27 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists. That's incredible for a 39-year-old. We'll never take that away from him. I'm not anti-LeBron, whatever.
Right.
But of those 27 points, 18 were in the first half. It's interesting. His plus-minus was -9, which I think is a little bit of an overrated stat. He played 41 minutes. I just look at LeBron at 39 years old, and I think the combination of the time that he is naturally going to miss during the regular season because he's 39 years old.
Right.
I don't know if he can be the best player on a championship team anymore. And maybe you would argue he's not even the best player on this team with Anthony Davis, but the great, like LeBron still has those 2014, 2015, 2016 flashes for a quarter or a half, but he just can't sustain it for 48 minutes. That's not a knock on him.
Right.
I just think that that era of LeBron just putting an entire organization on his back is kind of over.
Yeah, it's over for sure.
Yeah.
It just can't sustain the energy. It doesn't matter how much of a freak of nature that he is. You just can't sustain it. So you'll see it in the game yesterday, right? Where first half he looks like a world beater.
Yep.
Third quarter he does nothing. I think he takes two shots, right? So it's like, and that's strategic for him as well. Like he's trying to get them off to a good start. He wanted that third quarter somebody else to step up and take the pressure off of him and AD's shoulders. That's usually D'Angelo Russell. That's usually Austin Reeves. That can be Rui Hachimura. Nobody really stepped up in that position yesterday. And so if we're talking about this year in particular, last year is a different year, different animal. This year, those guys have played well, and they have had moments of taking over games, especially D'Angelo Russell. He's shooting the best he's ever shot from the three-point land, right? So he had an off game yesterday. I don't expect him to do that next game. And so that's why I don't feel as bad about the position that the Lakers are in, because they have guys that can step up and be able to give them that extra scoring punch that they've had confidence in this year. So that's why I'm excited to see game two. On your question, LeBron should not be the number one player on the team right now. He just can't sustain it. He's always good enough. He can be a two for sure, where he can take time off, but not a number one guy anymore. Shouldn't be a number one guy anymore.
Let me ask you a bigger picture question. We talked about this a little bit last night. This playoffs to me, like we've known this LeBron, KD, Golden State era. You know, it's hitting its end point. You know, LeBron is 39. KD is going to be 36 this year. I think Steph is already 36. This feels like the year, because we've been there for a while, but then 2022, the Warriors make their run, win the title.
Yeah.
Last year, the Lakers, to their credit, they were in the Western Conference Finals. This feels like the year, like, you know, those old guys, you know, they're going down kicking and screaming, but Warriors are out. I think the Suns, we just talked about them. I think it's not going to end well for them. And I think the Lakers, even if they put up a fight, I think it's a 5-6 game series, and right. I think they're out. This feels like the year where the league is slowly going to transition from a LeBron, Steph, KD league, at least in the postseason,
right,
to something else. And I don't know if the next big guy is Luka, if it's Anthony Edwards, if it's whoever. Jokic obviously sort of established himself last year. Right. This feels like kind of, whether they want to or not, kind of the handing the baton from the older guys to those young guys. You agree with that?
Man, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right now, this league, the top three, four players are all European.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, number one, that's the new wave. The new wave is free-flowing basketball, points, skilled players at the top that are young. And we have that. We have Luka. We have SGA, who's from Canada. We have Jokic. We have Giannis. Giannis has been hurt. And I'm not even putting Giannis in that group right now. I think he's on the tail dive as well. His game isn't really built for where we are right now. He's still kind of in the same place that he's been. He scores the same way. He's not really evolved his game. And I don't think he really can. He's not that skilled of a player. He's a good player. He's obviously one of the greats, but he's not that skilled to be able to make transitions, to evolve his game to now shooting threes and shooting mid-range and doing all the things that Luka or SGA can do, right? So Anthony Edwards as well. So you talk about these players. You talk about Jason Tatum, throw him in the mix as well. So the game is changing. It always does. And, I'm with you. I think the game has kind of passed him on as far as postseason comes, because they'll be fine in regular season.
I'm going to throw a total curveball at you that I didn't, mention to you before. But you're obviously, sports. You're around him, all that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of been a talking point. Are you at all worried about, the quote-unquote, state of American basketball, right? You have, like you said, all the emerging stars, Jokic, Luka, SGA. I mean, if you want to throw Jamal Murray from Canada in there. Mm-hmm. Tatum, it's like, is he ever going to be that guy that's he's had success, but he got to the finals and he kind of flamed out, whatever.
Yeah.
Anthony Edwards, maybe, but I don't know. Is it something you worry about? Being a sports fan, is it in your consciousness, or do you think that's an overblown kind of narrative?
I think it's overblown. I mean, basketball is basketball. Skilled players are skilled players. Obviously, our kids can be just as skilled as they are if we teach it that way.
Sure.
And we give them the blueprint on that. But right now, a lot of times, in the U.S., we get caught up on flash more than substance, and I think that's kind of just what it is. We're in an era now where,
Instagram, it's the
social
truth,
media,
man,
and so all these mixtapes and highlight tapes. I want to see a game. I want to see if you're skilled. I want to see if you can pull up in the mid range and make a shot. If you can get in the mid range, take a pump fake and do a two step to get to the layup. Just the stuff that Luka does. And so it's just about teaching it. We have the ability, and so I'm not worried about that. I think Jason Tatum receives a lot of unfair criticism as well. I mean, the guy has done nothing but win. He hasn't won the big one yet, but he's been there. He's 26 years old.
I was going to look it up. I bet he's about 26
years old. He's 26.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I get it. We want instant gratification, but the kid is, he's going to win one.
You know what I think it is? It's because he was so good, so young. If you remember that rookie year, 19 years old, he's going shot for shot with LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals 2018. Yep. And like you said, sometimes it just takes time. Just because he had a moment when he's 19 years old doesn't mean that he's going to be the best player in the league at 20 years old. Right. So I do think this is kind of an important, as we start to kind of look ahead to today's games, I think this is an important playoffs for him. I mean, it's a weird correlation, but I remember going into the NFL playoffs this year. It's like everything's kind of breaking Lamar Jackson's way, right? Home field advantage. The defense is playing great. Those Kansas City Chiefs, they're not playing very well right now. They just lost to the Raiders on Christmas Day.
Right.
And I it didn't work out for Lamar. I don't blame Lamar. I think it was terrible play calling. But the point I'm trying to make is I kind of feel that way for Jason Tatum. It's like Giannis is hurt. Embiid is hurt. The Knicks are the two seed. Julius Randle's hurt. It's like, this kind of has to be the year you have to at least get back to the finals. And it's like, if you lose because the Nuggets are incredible, that's one thing. But if you lose in round two to whoever, to the Cavs, it's going to be like, that's when I do think we start to have questions. I mean, I think the path has opened up very nicely for Boston this year.
Yeah, I think the thing with Tatum as well is people question whether he's an alpha male when it comes to whose team is that? Obviously, he's the best player on that team.
Sure.
But a lot of times, you'll see Jaylen Brown step into that role a lot of the times. You see Al Horford jump in that role a lot of the times. And I think this year, with the addition of Holiday and Porzingis, obviously Holiday has one. So he has something to kind of take from, to lean on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't, essentially have to be the alpha all the time, but there are going to be big moments in the playoffs where he's going to have to. And I think that's where we have to judge him, because that team is so good. They have three players averaging 20 points per game. So his numbers as far as scored may not look like the Luka or the Jokic as far as the top number, right? But in the big moments is when he's going to have to step up, and we'll see this year.
We will see this year. We will see in 27 minutes from now as game one of the Miami Heat and Boston Celtics will tip off. And I'll tell you what, we'll come back, maybe switch gears, talk a little bit of NFL. Mm-hmm. But before we do, first time this afternoon, let's toss it over the news desk. Isaac Lohenkron, what is trending, my friend?
Well, thank you, fellas. And that is what is trending: the playoffs, both the NBA and the Stanley Cup variety. Game one, as you said, tipping off at the top of the hour from Boston between the Celtics and the Miami Heat. Boston, of course, the one seed in the Eastern Conference. On Saturday night, Denver defeated the Los Angeles Lakers in their game one, 114-103. Nikola Jokic, 32 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists as Denver won its ninth straight head-to-head meeting with the Lakers. Earlier Saturday night at Madison Square Garden, the New York Knicks won their game one over the Philadelphia 76ers, 111-104. Today's Stanley Cup playoff action about to face off with game one from Florida between the Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning, while on Saturday night, the Boston Bruins toppled the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-1. Now in boxing on Saturday night, heavy underdog Ryan Garcia upset the previously 31-0 Devin Haney by decision. He knocked down Haney three times during the course of the bout. Garcia was not eligible to win Haney's junior welterweight title belt, however, because he weighed too much at the weigh-in on Friday. This is the same weigh-in where Garcia drank a beer while on stage at the weigh-in. And then after the fight last night, after his victory, drinking was still very much on Garcia's mind.
I walked through the fire and still held it down and still drank every day and still beat him. And I did everything. Drank every single night, went out on the first Monday and the Tuesday and drank. What happened? I won. I necessarily am I proud of that, but I'm just saying, this is it was a statement to show you.
That's right.
I do whatever I want. I still win.
Ryan Garcia with the anti-Tom Brady TB12 method. Back to you guys.
Oh, nice.
That was incredible. I didn't hear that audio.
Me neither. I'm excited, too. I'm having a drink right now. A drink of coffee.
Say, hey, whatever. As long as we do the show. By the way, 25 minutes until tip-off, just put on NBA Countdown. Kendrick Perkins stealing our take. Is Jason Tatum ready to be the best player and take over in the postseason? I think they must be listening to Fox Sports Radio over there. So,
yeah, they are. No question.
No question.
Why wouldn't they?
Everyone knows Perk looks up to me. So, all right, Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes in on a Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning, depending on where you are. Kerry, let's switch gears.
Yep.
All right, so you obviously played in the NFL for quite some time. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me just ask you this. What is this week like for a player? So NFL Draft Thursday, we'll get to all our takes and who's going to go where and all that stuff. But you live through it. Mm-hmm. What is this week like for a guy getting ready for Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
It's big, man. It's life-changing. It's nervous. It's nerve-wrecking. It's a lot of things. I think you go through the whole gauntlet of emotions, right? A guy like myself who, you know, was projected anywhere from second to fourth round. And, you know, obviously as an optimist, you're always thinking, oh, no later than second.
Sure.
And you bring your whole family comes up to Louisville and we have like a little watch party in my room. And, you know, grandmother's there, the whole family's there. And we're sitting there and obviously second round comes around. You're excited. Oh, it's my time. It's my time, Aaron. And then you sit through the first day and you don't get picked. And you're like, oh, it's not my time. It's not my time. So you go through those emotions and you got to be comforted and you have to have those conversations with your parents and your loved ones. So it's to be reassured that it's going to be okay. So the whole gauntlet of things. And I go out and see my friends later that night and they're doing the same thing, which is great. So having that great support system around helps.
So were these teammates here at Louisville?
Some of them, and just, you know, like I said, family was there. But then, you know, you come back, get taken off the board early in the second round, fourth pick to the Jets, and then it's like, all right, I'm in the door. I got drafted in a situation where it looks like it's going to be good for me as well. And so you kind of have to temper things down to, okay, do you want to go second round? You want to go highest, or do you want to go to the best place, the best possible fit? And so as a player, you want to go into those situations where you have a chance to go to the best fit, I believe. And that was my experience. And I went to the Jets and, you know, never looked back, started from day one. And, you know, the rest is history.
Let me ask a dumb question. Yeah. Do you have, because, so like Caleb Williams, right? So he's obviously probably only met with the Bears, maybe Washington, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's not going 11 to the Vikings, right?
Right.
I mean, the Vikings could trade up. When you're, you could go, you know, you said second to fourth. Have you met with all 32 teams? Do you have an idea of who is interested, less interested?
Yeah.
Or is there a group of four or five teams where you know, because like, as an example, like, right, last year, this is an extreme example, but we knew, okay, you know, Bryce Young's going one, and then, you know, Houston needs a guy, the Colts need a guy, and then it's like, there's four quarterbacks for three spots, and whoever doesn't get picked by the Colts, there's probably a pretty good chance that they're going to fall.
Right.
Do you know if there's four, five, seven, whatever it is, teams that are interested, and then do you also know, like, oh, I thought I was going to Arizona, and I know these next four teams I didn't really have a conversation with, so I'm probably not going to them? Or at that stage, is it not like that?
Yeah, it's like that. I mean, for me, it was that way as well. So I talked to a lot of teams. I remember distinctly four or five where I was like, I'll probably go there.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to one of those teams, right? So for sure, I mean, I met with the Jets at the Combine. I met with the Patriots at the Combine. I had visits to all these teams. I had visits to the Ravens. I had visits to the Cardinals, like all these things. And so it's like, all right, this is probably what – every time that team came up, I'm like, all right, let's see what's going on. You know, that whole deal. And so, you know, I really thought I was – to be honest, I thought it was going to be Baltimore or the Patriots.
Okay.
Meeting with both of them, hearing all those guys, you know, talking to Mangini, Belichick, and all those guys. You know, Mangini ended up being my coach after
That's
my
right,
second
yeah.
year. And so, like, you start to see that, and you're like, oh, I get it. But the Jets actually moved up in front of the Patriots to take me.
Wow,
so it was one of those.
Look at you.
So even a little fourth-round movement. We had a little fourth-round movement that happened. So it was fun to see. It was cool, that process.
I'm guessing I know the answer to this. You never saw – Belichick never, like, pulled you aside in one of those big AFC matchups and AFC East matchups and was like – Those pesky Jets, we were ready to grab you two spots later. I'm guessing nothing like that ever happened with him?
Not that in particular, but me and Belichick, we talked a lot, actually. He was very complimentary of my game on in the media and stuff like that. And so talked to him on the field every now and then. But the Mangini one was funny because playing them my rookie year, I mean, obviously we talked and, you know, they wanted me. And then he ends up being my coach the next year. So it kind of worked out.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, we'll come back. We'll actually share some takes. We know that Caleb Williams is going number one. Once we get to number two, it gets much more interesting. Speaking of which, the Patriots at number three are kind of a fascinating spot as well. We'll come back. We'll talk some NFL draft, which is obviously Thursday. And remember, we will have live coverage here on Fox Sports Radio with Jay Glazer, Steve Keim, LeVar Arrington, and Rob Stone. NFL draft next, Fox Sports Radio. Fox Sports Radio. Sunday edition, 13 minutes from tip-off of the first NBA playoff game of the day, Miami at Boston, 1 p.m. Eastern time. But NFL draft on Thursday, again, 8 p.m. Eastern. We will have live coverage with Rob Stone, former Cardinals GM Steve Keim, insider Jay Glazer, and College Football Hall of Famer LeVar Arrington. Gary, when I say 2024 NFL draft, it's a very broad question. You can take it in any direction that you want.
Yeah.
We know Caleb's going one.
Mm-hmm.
After that, like, I'll say this. It's a fun draft from that perspective. Is I think you could see two or three different guys go at number two. Then what happens at number three? Are teams like the Cardinals or Chargers going to trade back, knowing that people need quarterbacks? You know, I think even the quarterback order depends on who you talk to. So there's a lot of variables going into Thursday night. What intrigues you the most going into Thursday night?
I mean, I think the most intriguing thing is there's a lot of scenarios, but for me, the Iowa cornerback, DeJean.
Wow, that was a curveball.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
For sure.
I know him real quick.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh. He was injured, so he didn't go to the combine and do anything, but he did his drills here a little bit before the draft, and all the measurables are that he's a really explosive DB. And that, I mean, we saw that on tape, but to actually see him work out and do it that way. So, you know, as a former DB, seeing that guy, you know, a lot of – there hasn't been a white starting cornerback in the National Football League in a long time. And so I would love to see him have some really good success.
Well, it's wild because, you know, we all make fun of Iowa football.
Yeah.
But Jack Campbell came from Iowa, was very successful last year.
Yep.
Chris Perfett may be familiar with him. Sam Laporta came from Iowa.
That's correct.
You may be familiar with his handiwork here as a Pro Bowler as a rookie this year. So it's like we make fun of Iowa at the college level, but at the pro, they produce pros, and whatever they're doing, they develop guys really well internally. What do you think happens to number two? I mean, it's cliche, but I just find the whole quarterback conversation fascinating because – it felt like there was a very clear 1-2, Caleb's one, then it's Drake May.
Yeah.
And then, you know, throughout the season it was, is it Marvin Harrison, is it Brock Bowers, is it whatever? Jaden Daniels wins the Heisman, he's incredible. Now it's not just, oh, Jaden Daniels could go in the top three, it's that he could surpass Drake May. And then depending on who you listen to, Drake May could fall, you know, to maybe quarterback four, maybe J.J. McCarthy jumps up.
Right.
So what do you think happens with this whole quarterback conundrum at the top of the draft?
You know what? I really don't know. I do know that if the Commanders stay at two and they want to take Jaden Daniels, it makes sense.
Sure.
Just from the whole regime, you know, Magic being there and having that, you know, I guess a little trickle of, you know, Magic and Showtime in that situation to bring – Jaden Daniels in that situation, he's flashy. He can make the big plays. He can take it to the house from 80 yards out. He can make every throw. And so to have somebody that's kind of fits that bill seems like it's the right thing to
sure.
do. I mean, I think Drake May, watching him play, I watched a lot of him because of Louisville and ACC.
Sure.
Seeing him, he has flashes of being brilliant and looking really good, but he's also has moments of being really pedestrian. So
sure.
to have that happen on the collegiate level where you actually look that way on tape, on film in that league, it's hard for me to say that he's a clear-cut number two guy. Now, I would take Jaden Daniels, but you know, we'll see how that goes.
Real quick, do you think there's one? I'm not an X's and O's expert. Yeah. You know, we kind of know what Cliff Kingsbury's track record is as a play caller. Is there one that you think fits better with Washington at number two?
I think it's Daniels.
He's got a little Kyler in him. He could dual threat guy.
I could see that. I mean, it would fit him for sure. But Drake May's not a statue. He can move a little bit as well. So it's going to be fit. We know that. Mm-hmm. And hopefully whoever comes in, they actually give him the resources to be good and give him time as well, because it's hard to play in that league as a rookie. I mean, obviously, you know, in Houston – they would say differently with their guy, but with Stroud. But a lot of times, it takes a little time.
So then let's go to that next part, because I think the interesting thing then becomes, how about number three? Because you talk about resources. You talk about first-year head coach, defensive head coach, no real skill position talent that I'm aware of to speak of, defensive culture, cold weather, AFC East. Feels like whoever ends up in New England, and I don't think there's any doubt they're going to take a quarterback. Like, I feel like their back's going to be caught up against the wall. Is that fair to say?
100%. And I would see New England trying to be smarter than everyone else and at the end of the day, you know, drop out of that third spot.
I hope they do, for the sake of whatever quarterback ends up there.
That's the point, right? Like, whatever quarterback they bring in is not going to have instant success there.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, they've had some really bad years, some down years in New England. A couple in a row doesn't really sit well for that fan base. So I don't know what they're going to do. I think, you know, Drake May kind of fits the bill as far as, you know, seemingly strong arm quarterback, a bigger guy, a guy that can come in and seems like he can weather the storm. He seems even tempered when I've seen him play and even in his interviews and stuff. So, in the perfect draft world, if we were trying to construct this thing and really do it by the book, I mean, I could see it being Caleb Daniels and Drake May, and I think everybody would be happy in that position.
Just draft J.J. McCarthy. I mean, he's the best quarterback prospect ever.
Cold weather, too.
I'm not as anti-J.J. McCarthy as everybody. I'll just say this really quick on J.J. McCarthy, because we got to come back, talk a little bit about Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
The one thing that nobody talks about with J.J. McCarthy, plays 15 games this year, six without his head coach, and against the two best defenses that he saw all year, his primary play caller was the active head coach. And I just sit there and say, like, okay, put Michael Penix in a situation where Kalen DeBoer finds out an hour before kickoff that he's not coaching in the biggest game. And let's see how, you know, I'm not knocking Michael Penix, but it's like, I don't feel like anybody talks about that with J.J. McCarthy, you know?
No, I like J.J. I think he's going to be a good pro as well. I just don't think you could take him with the top three picks. We saw what he was. He had some good games. He has all the skill set to be a very good pro, but we don't know yet.
Very interesting stuff. It all starts Thursday, NFL draft. We'll come back, talk about a guy that's not in the draft, Belichick, next. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two, Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes. We are broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. TireRack.com will help you get there. An unmatched selection, fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, and over 10,000 recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Game one of the Eastern Conference opening round is set to get underway. Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat are the first game today. By the way, me and J.J. Redick have a little social media beef, but that's neither here nor there.
Really?
He ended up coming at me about something. I ended up being right, and I just kind of poked him every single time.
Uh-huh.
I was right until he just finally blocked me, so that's neither here.
Do you want to speak on it a little bit? What was it?
Oh, I mean, this is like an hour conversation, but no, it was it was something I ended up proving. So it was during the NCAA tournament, so I can vividly remember. It was the 2022, so 2 years ago,
yep.
Elite Eight. It was Houston versus Villanova, and I know you follow college basketball a little bit.
Yes.
Two very physical teams that they just play like real in-your-shirt defense, like the kind of defense you can't play in the NBA. Like the rules just don't allow it.
Right.
And so, I mean, I could probably find the tweet right now, but all I said, you know, it was one of those where I love college basketball, but I get that it's not for everybody. But it was one of those games where it was like, you know, 28-24 at the half.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and it was the game where all the NBA people come in and say, this is why I can't watch college basketball. The product is so bad. It's like,
right.
And all I said was, if NBA players were allowed to play defense the way that college players are, we'd see a lot of NBA games in the 90s and 80s.
Right.
Didn't seem that controversial. It wasn't a criticism. It wasn't even a criticism of the NBA. And a lot of people perceived it as, oh, look at this college guy saying that that NBA players don't play defense. So it kind of made its rounds around NBA Twitter. And so J.J. Redick just hops in and he says, tell me you don't watch the NBA without telling me you don't watch the NBA. And so what ended up happening was, so first of all, I just said, look, this is not a criticism of the NBA. It's just the rules have changed. I mean, you can go back to the hand check era.
Yeah.
Every finals game, like I think the last finals before the hand check was that Lakers Pistons finals in 04. Every game was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so he kind of turned on me, whatever. And so long story short, the playoffs happen. Sure enough, defense amps up. You play a team 4, 5, 6 times. You know each other. So every single time that a game was in the 80s or 90s, I'd just be, hey, JJ, did you see that game? Hey, JJ, did you see that game? By the way, there was a moment. It was incredible. He had Kevin Durant on his podcast that week, and he called me. I can't say it on air. He called me an F-head on his podcast. I'll find you the clip during the break.
I wouldn't see that, yeah.
But he says, there was some college basketball writer. What an F-head. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Blah, 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 blah. So anyway, anytime a game is played in the 80s or 90s, I went ahead and made sure that he saw that, including games that he was calling. And then finally he's like, bro, you don't get it. And then he just blocked me. So that's it. Listen, you know, think about me. I'm very East Coast, and I don't start fights. I just finish them.
Yeah.
And so you try to make me look bad, I'm just going to let you know, like, you know, hey, you might have been wrong.
Right.
And just listen, JJ, I don't know if you were watching the Suns Mavericks game that you were calling, but I don't know if you caught the final score, but final score was 91-88. Just wanted to make sure you saw. And so after about 5 or 6 of those, and then what was actually funny was a lot of guys that listen to my show and all that stuff, guys and girls would chime in and, hey, JJ, I think Torres has you on the... And so finally, I think he just got tired of... some would call it social media harassment, but when he turned all of NBA Twitter on me, you know, whatever. So,
All's fair.
Anyway.
All's fair.
All's fair. Yeah,
so,
listen.
So you don't think you'll be on the Mind the Game podcast with LeBron and J.J. Redick anytime soon?
Talking or? any strategy, X's and O's.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But you know what's crazy? Because this came up again, is... college basketball and the NBA, and I do want to get to the NFL, but yeah. They're essentially two different sports. Like Stan Van Gundy,
yep.
You may have heard of him.
Yeah.
He's coached in the NBA.
Yes.
He was calling the UConn-Illinois Elite Eight game, and he literally said during the broadcast, he said, I haven't been around college. He's like, being around college basketball for the last month, it's amazing to me how much more physical you can play in college.
Yes.
And so that was the only point that I made from the beginning. And it was like, oh my God, wow. Tell me you don't know ball, Torres. And I'm like, well, I do know ball. They're just kind of two different sports. And then what was funny was this year, you know, when Stan Van Gundy said that, I put it out on Twitter. I was like, this is what J.J. Redick blocked me for. And then I had other former NBA players like, you don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, but literally, Stan Van Gundy just said it. Like, well, what are you picking on me for? My whole point was what Stan Van Gundy just said. So,
right.
Anyway, shout out J.J. Redick, who's on call of game one. But that really happened. That was a thing for sure.
I love that story.
And I will show you when he called. He didn't know my name, but he said, some college basketball writer. What an F head.
He probably knew your name. That's another,
he probably
that's
did. He didn't
shot.
Want to give me the. He didn't
shot.
Want to give me the credit.
Yeah,
but it was kind of wild. He's like, he has Kevin Durant on his pod, and he's talking about me. So
there
whatever.
You go.
Now KD knows about me too. So learn the name KD. All right, so let's talk NFL. I mean, unless you want to go through more, I don't think I have any good social media beefs besides JJ Redick. That's really the only one.
That's a good one. I mean, JJ seems like he's one of those guys that is a know-it-all. So yeah, I could see why that would be an issue.
Yeah, he is.
For anybody. Yeah, yeah. For
yeah.
Sure.
And then it was a whole thing. Yeah. But anyway, all right. So NFL draft we just talked about. You know, what was interesting, Kerry, is you mentioned, you know, your draft experience.
Yeah.
And for people who missed it in hour one, you got in pretty deep with the Patriots and you got to know Belichick and Mangini, and then Mangini becomes your head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I bring it up because this week there was a very interesting article that came out from ESPN Investigative Report, and it essentially led into the draft of how is Bill Belichick not a coach in the NFL right now?
Right.
And there were a lot of different, it was a, you know, probably 5,000 word article, probably 30 minutes to read it front to back, but it was very in depth. It goes through all the different teams, the Panthers and the whoever, everybody that had a job opening, the Chargers, the Commanders, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it really kind of focused on the relationship between Belichick, Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, and then also Robert Kraft, obviously, who's the owner of the Patriots. Everyone's kind of big takeaway was that the way the article framed it sort of made it sound like Robert Kraft talked Arthur Blank out of hiring Bill Belichick. But if you really read the article, it doesn't really read like that. It was more Arthur Blank called for feedback,
right?
And Kraft was like, honestly, he's hard to work with. You know, you have a very, I know how you are. You have a communal type setting over there. You want to have a personal relationship with your head coach. That's going to be hard. It brings it all up to say, article was very interesting, but it leads to the fact that a guy who has won 6 Super Bowls, coached in 9, even more if you include time as an assistant coach with the New York Giants, etc.
Right.
I mean, he's the most accomplished football coach ever. He wants to be coaching. He is not coaching. And I just want your reaction, but especially knowing now that, you know, you got to know him a tiny little bit. I don't want to, you know, oversell what your relationship is with him. But just what are your thoughts in general about Belichick and his future?
Yeah, his future is one that's definitely in doubt. I was on the record early saying once he got let go or, you know, essentially stepped away, or however you want to frame the departure, I knew he wasn't going to be a hot item on the market to be a head coach. And a lot of people were going, you know, gung-ho crazy about, oh, Bill Belichick's available. All these teams can use him, and he's going to, you know, he could even come to San Francisco and take over and get them over the hump. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
No, it's not happening. Number one, the most accomplished coach. You can't take anything away from that. But we also can't take away from the controversy that's surrounding him as well. That's part of his story as well. And so let's not forget that. But the number one thing about why I knew he wouldn't be a hot commodity as a coach right now is the track record of who he is and how he establishes programs. This younger generation isn't about that.
Mm-hmm.
This younger generation is about sharing and speaking and saying how they feel and being able to communicate on the level that in his heyday, he didn't have that communication.
Yeah, 100%.
He had that communication between one or two players.
Mm-hmm. But we find out that he had no relationship with Brady. So.
Exactly. So having that, that will not translate to this younger player. And if you don't translate to the younger player, the younger generation, they're not just going to buy into your way anymore.
Mm.
Your way hasn't won the last couple of years. So what do you have to stand on, obviously, besides your past and who you were? Like, we live in a society now, it's who are you right now?
100%.
And that's who he is right now. He's not a good coach right now because of his relatability issues with players. So I knew it was going to be hard for him.
I want to get back to Belichick in a second, but let me ask you a dumb question. A guy like McVay, where, you know, living in LA, you hear interviews with players all the time of, oh no. And I remember the first year he got hired, 31, 32 years old, and you wonder, like, are players going to run over him? And it's like, and I remember hearing players, whether it was Aaron Donald, I can't remember who it was, like, no, he's the alpha, he's our general, we take orders from him. But he does have the way of letting that those 53 guys in that locker room know, I'm in charge, I'm calling the shots, but also in a relatable new age way where guys believe in that vision. So how are coaches, whether it's a Sean McVay, whoever the guys that are successful, LaFleur, et cetera, able to find that balance of, I'm receptive to what you need, you want, you whatever, but I'm also not letting you run over me and I'm still kind of running the show here.
It's about being accountable. Mm-hmm. Hold yourself accountable. Hold your players accountable. Don't let the level of player accountability change that accountability.
Sure.
And that's what Belichick did earlier, right? Like, he treated everybody the same,
sure,
so to speak. And so you could see that. If he's not going to – they're not paying Brady. If they're not giving Brady any leash outside of this one particular game that we're playing, then from top to bottom, it's that way. It comes to the point where if you're a new guy coming in, a young guy, a guy that's trying to establish yourself as the alpha, as the guy that this is my team, the first thing you have to do – in that meeting is say that, but also make yourself human as well. Mm. Because if we're seeing you as somebody that's untouchable or we can't talk to you, okay, that's going to be the relationship and I'm going to act accordingly. And so now the level of communication doesn't happen because I'd rather talk to the assistant coach and then it starts to become leaks.
Leaks
in the culture, right? Because now it seems to be side conversations that are happening. And that's what I see from the younger players, because a lot of times you have specific coaches assigned to players, obviously position coaches. But even outside of that, I had coaches that I would talk to that would not be my coach that I needed to go to for quote unquote therapy sessions. Right.
Sure.
And so in the Patriot way, they're all saying, no, we're this one person. The head coach is the head coach and nothing can be said outside of that. Right. Where in a healthy situation, we can all have dialogue, and I can talk to this guy that's not you, and we can still have no fissures in what we're doing as a system. So just, I think it's that accountability on both ends.
So you obviously didn't play for the Patriots, but you played for Mangini, who's a disciple.
Yeah.
So would it be frowned upon, like, if you just needed to, like, talk to, like, your DB's coach, mm-hmm. or maybe you had a relationship with the running back's coach, you know, whatever, was that, like, frowned upon, not allowed? How did that work?
Well, you know, it always got related back to Mangini.
Interesting.
For sure. So it's the same way. And I didn't have a problem with it anyway. I mean, at that point, because when he first came in, it was that way. Like, it was, we're all together, right? Nobody's being treated differently. And that worked. We had success. We could see how smart and bright he was. We didn't get to see as much of his personality that first year because he was very, very trying to be Belichick to the pure essence of who he was. But as you got to know him, as we started to have a little success, you could see him and you could see the jovial nature that he, I guess, inherently had. Yeah, inherently. And not everybody, but I could see it. Like, I mean, I was a captain on the team and we had like personal captain meetings and stuff like that. So I could see him. But as that went on, that starts to wear thin if you're not winning.
Sure.
And then when it changes, and then when it really changed for him was when Brett Favre came in.
Oh, my goodness.
He couldn't keep Brett Favre on that same level of accountability as everybody, right? And so now it's like, oh, you're not doing that now.
Wow.
So it's different. So just like that, it has to stay
the
same.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
You played with Favre?
I did play with Brett, yeah.
Well, we got to come back and talk about that now. No, and I want to relate it back to Belichick because, you know, listen, I mean, greatest coach of all time is out of a job, and we don't know if there's going to be an opportunity for him. Tell you what, we'll come back. We'll continue this conversation because now I'm fascinated. I need the dirt on fire. No, I'm just kidding. Not dirt on fire, but we'll talk about your experience kind of being sort of in that Patriot way with Eric Mangini, but then also what it means for Bill Belichick's future. Lot to discuss. Belichick out of a job. That big scandalous report comes out from ESPN just a few days ago. We'll discuss that next. Fox Sports Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Radio. Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes, broadcasting live from the TireRack.com studios. Again, NFL Draft Thursday night. Make sure you're checking out our Fox Sports Radio coverage as Jay Glazer, Steve Keim, LeVar Arrington, and Rob Stone get your pick-by-pick analysis starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, so before the break, you know, we opened the show. First time that I've had the privilege of working with you, Kerry Rhodes, and we went through your esteemed colleagues, including Steve Hartman, who will be following us here in just a few minutes. And, you know, you work with a guy, you know, you get to learn about him, you know, not just guy, girl, too, get to learn about him or her. And, you know, I mean, I obviously followed your career, you know, about the same age, whatever.
Right.
But I forgot you played with Brett Favre, and we just talked about it during the break with that Jets year. And what I think is interesting is, and I want to hear all about it because I'm fascinated now, but you mentioned that frankly, you know, you said it on air, so I don't feel uncomfortable asking about it, but that, you know, Eric Mangini, who was hold everybody accountable, nobody's bigger than the system, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Everything changed when Brett Favre got there. First of all, was that one of those years? I can't remember, but there was two or three years there where he really waded into training camp to really kind of like, I remember like there was a couple years even in Green Bay where he wouldn't even show up until after training camp started. I mean, was he there for all the offseason, all the OTAs, or what was that? I can't remember.
No. The trade happened during training camp. So he came during training camp. And so it was very...
What was that like?
It was crazy. I mean, my roommate during camp is Chad Pennington.
Oh God!
that's my guy, and so like I'm sitting there just like something's going on. I mean, there was buzz, and we heard, you know, Favre still wanted to play, and you know we make the trade. I mean, obviously we have success in 06 with Pennington. We make the playoffs. He stayed healthy his first year, fully healthy in a long time, and so you know we played well. But the next year we didn't play well, and so we knew that you know there were some possibilities. But then, you know, you hear Brett coming in, and as you know, I was a Brett Favre fan as a kid, right? You know, and so you're like, man, Brett Favre may come. And then you start hearing the rumblings, and the next thing you know, he's there with his Wranglers on, and he's there with us hanging out. We're like, oh, Brett Favre's here. So bittersweet for me losing Chad, which is a really good friend of mine still now. And, you know, Brett comes in. You're excited first. There's buzz, and obviously we know he's won a Super Bowl. We know he's good, Hall of Famer, all those things. So excited. Then, you know, he kind of gets into the mix and he's doing everything he can to do that and be one of the guys, but he's not one of the guys. It's hard for him to be one of the guys. He's different. He has things that he's accustomed to. He has ways he's accustomed to handling things. And so just little things like for us, every game we had to wear suits on the away games. Brett Favre doesn't wear suits. He's literally a Wrangler guy. Like, he's wearing jeans and T-shirts, and you're looking like, hold up. All right, are we all doing this, or are you going to start making rules to acquiesce to this new guy coming in now? And so those things start to change, so cracks. And then it's like he didn't have a locker with us in the locker room. He had his own locker outside of us with the coaches.
Wow!
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's
like
that. Stuff.
And so, like, when things like that start happening, it's going to be tough for you to keep your locker room, especially if you're not winning. And so it changed with that. But, I mean, I love Mangini, and we've talked about some of this stuff after. But during that time, it was a little messy for us.
No, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, like you said, so for people who missed the front end of the conversation, this all started with Belichick and you know, Kerry played for a disciple in Eric Mangini. But that's one thing, by the way, I'll give Belichick credit for, is that he did hold Tom Brady all that time to the same standard as the 53rd guy. That's probably what allowed Tom Brady accepting it, but that's probably what also allowed them to have all that success for all those years, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It cannot be any different. Obviously, there is going to be difference in, you know, how
a star player is going to be received, but not, you can't treat them differently.
Yep.
That's a, it's a, it's a fine line on what that is. And so, you know, Mangini being young, he was young at the time. He was 34, 35. Like he was, yeah. People forget how young he was.
He was like
the
first Belichick assistant that really popped, right? If I,
yeah.
Maybe Romeo Crennel, I can't remember, but I think Mangini was like one of the
Mangini first. Was, yeah. Like it was actually tension in the first time we played the Patriots, right?
Yeah.
And so even no handshake.
The
quick handshake, no look type deal. Like it was a lot of that stuff. So it was fun. It was fun during the time. But yeah, when Brett came in, it showed the cracks. It was the first time where it's like, oh, it's not the same. And so that's where you start to have those leaks and things start to go south.
And you said you were a team captain, right? And you said you met as a team captain with Mangini separately. Is this something that you can bring up to the head coach, or is it totally off bounds?
Yeah,
out of bounds?
I think you should be able to. I don't know if I did.
Sure.
I can't say that. But yeah, I mean the captain meetings would be me, Brett. I think Sean knows.
Oh, well, if Brett's there.
That part, right? Yeah. So, I mean, but individually, I mean, you probably wouldn't have said anything. But during the captain meetings, yeah, I mean, he was a captain too. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Separate locker. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
The truth comes out.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. And I think you don't really, I mean, you understand that there are levels to certain things, but when you lose, it's just a bigger deal. Now, if you were winning, maybe it wouldn't have been that way, right? But, yeah, the success wasn't equating to what the treatment was at the time.
This all started with a Bill Belichick conversation. I'll tell you what, we'll toss it over the news desk. We'll hear from Nick Wyatt, and then we'll come back and actually get back to Belichick. But I'd rather talk 05 Jets or whatever year it was. 08 Jets, because this is fascinating. We'll discuss Belichick next. Kevin Wyatt, what's up, man? How you doing?
Going on right now. It's one of the best times of year in sports. I think October is my personal favorite, but the mid-March to the end of April has got to be a close
second. We had this
debate
on our Saturday
show. It's really good.
It's like you go from March Madness, final games, to Masters, to NBA playoffs, to NFL draft. By the way, Major League Baseball opening day is in there at some point. It's a pretty good run.
Stanley Cup playoffs as well. We don't want to forget that. We do have a game going on right now in the NHL. Lightning and Panthers, that's an all-Florida matchup, and they are tied at one goal apiece as they have reached the end of the first period. Sam Reinhart, the goal scorer for Florida. Then Brandon Hagel answering about 10 minutes later for the Lightning. Second game of the day coming up in about an hour and a half. Capitals and Rangers at Madison Square Garden. And later this afternoon, Avalanche and Jets will square off up in Winnipeg. In the NBA, we've got the first game of the day. Game one of the Eastern Conference first round. Celtics and Heat. And it's Boston in front 23-14. And it was kind of expected to be this way with no Jimmy Butler playing. He's expected to be out multiple weeks with his MCL injury. And it's expected to be a tough road for the Miami Heat in this series, and the Celtics already out in front by 9 points. And that's because they've shot the ball incredibly well, hitting five of their first 10 three-point shots. They're 9 of 18 shooting the basketball overall in this game. Bam Adebayo does have 6 points, the leading scorer for Miami. And it's Kristaps Porzingis, the leading scorer for Boston. He's got 7 points on 3 of 4 shooting so far in this game. Coming up at 3:30 Eastern time, Mavericks and Clippers out in Los Angeles, game one of that series. And Kawhi Leonard officially listed as questionable, but Adrian Wojnarowski yesterday saying that there's increasing doubt that he'll play, and that's because he didn't even face off against contact in practice yesterday, so chances are we're not going to see Kawhi Leonard again in the playoffs for the Clippers, at least for today. Coming up at 7 o'clock, Pacers and Bucks up in Milwaukee. Pelicans and Thunder will be the nightcap, 9:30 out in Oklahoma City. Major League Baseball, a couple of games just about to get started in the next few minutes. Red Sox and Pirates up in Pittsburgh. White Sox Phillies over in Philadelphia. The Astros will face the Nationals in Washington. Rays and Yankees in the Bronx. Angels will face the Reds in Cincinnati. And the Athletics and Guardians over in Cleveland. Back to you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Kevin Wyatt.
Thanks, Kev.
Appreciate you. Fox Sports Radio, Fox Sports Sunday. Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes taking you to the top of the hour. Steve Hartman and Rich Orenberger will follow us. Okay, so Belichick, let's come full circle on this really quick. Mm-hmm. So the part of the article was about this coaching cycle, but part of the article was next coaching cycle, which is, you know, it could be explosive if the Cowboys actually move on from Mike McCarthy, which, you know, Jerry Jones has been reticent to make major moves. Philadelphia, they said that Belichick has had a longstanding relationship with Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
Howie Roseman said, I just called to check in on him. There was never a conversation about him coaching our team. So do you think this is it for Belichick? And by the way, let me ask you a separate question. A little hard to answer, but there were some insinuations in the article about the idea that Belichick only wants to keep coaching to break Don Shula's record.
Right.
I certainly think that's a motivating factor, but to me, I get the sense that Belichick, as long as he's healthy and as long as he's wanted, wants to coach. So do you think, and we don't know who's going to open up next year, but do you think there's a spot for him somewhere in these 32 teams, or has his way of doing things just completely disappeared?
That's very hard. It is a hard question. Personally, I think his time is up. I really do.
Sure.
I really do. I think, like I said, the league has moved on. You have a smarter, more emotionally aware player this day and age.
Sure.
It's more welcomed. Back in the day, even my time playing, right, like the head coach's word was gold, and that's all you really cared about.
Sure.
Even outside of yourself, right? And to be into any type of team situation, there has to be a level of that. But I just don't see him being able to change his ways at that point. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, they always say.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's really hard. And so for him, I'm sure there is a couple of situations that are that could happen. I don't see it yet. So I would probably be surprised at wherever he ends up going if he gets another job. That's kind of my stance on it, yeah.
No, it's fascinating. And I think, you know, the thing that the article really pointed out really well is that, you know, he told Arthur Blank he doesn't care about player personnel. He's willing to work with a GM, whatever. But I do think the age is working against him. 71 years old. I think they said he'd be 73 by the start of the 2025 NFL season. He's obviously not coaching this year.
Right.
But that's basically it, is that you have to overhaul everything that you do for, what are we talking about, a 2-year run, a 3-year run. It's interesting. Right. I will say this. I do think that him being on TV this year is going to help him.
Yeah.
It sounds weird, but he's an incredibly bright guy. I think ESPN is going to put him in situations where he sounds smart. You know, listen, I remember, I don't know if you saw this or not, but he was on College Game Day for the Army-Navy game, and like Herbie, and I thought Pat McAfee did a very good job of setting him up to look good and look smart and ask, not that he needs their help looking smart, but ask questions that would engage him. And so I do think that will play a role, but you know, now that I think about it, like if we're talking about the fall of 2025, he'll be 73 years old. I mean, that's a tough spot to hire a head coach.
Yeah.
Although he's a baby compared to Jerry Jones, so maybe that'll play a role.
Jerry Jones ain't coaching either. Jerry Jones is masquerading around like he's on a big deal.
But that's what I mean. It's like Jerry Jones is 81, he'll be 83, so maybe he's like, oh, this young whippersnapper, right, Belichick, let's bring him in to right the ship.
I mean, the Dallas situation, obviously, it looks appealing, especially if McCarthy can't muster up something else here and finally get over the hump. Yes, obviously, but again, I just don't see it, and I wouldn't see him. If he loves coaching so much, I actually threw out the idea of him going to San Francisco and being the defensive coordinator.
Yeah. Do you think that ever got much traction?
I don't know. I heard that there was a story that said something about that came out after I said it too. But if he really loved football, he would be doing that right now if he wanted to coach. So I think the caveat of wanting to break that record is a real thing as well.
Yeah, I think it's a real thing. I don't think that's a thing that motivates him.
Yeah.
And you know, the insinuation was, I think it's 15 wins to pass Shula.
Yeah.
And after that, it's like, well, you know, whatever. It's like, well, first of all, that's still two seasons. I don't know that I buy it. I just don't know. I just find it to be a fascinating story. And, you know, we'll see what happens next with Belichick. Anything else from the NFL perspective that's caught your eye kind of leading up to the draft, all this stuff? I mean, it's kind of a quiet time, but...
Yeah, no, not really. I think the one thing that I'm excited to see, obviously, my hometown Jets and what they're going to do with that 10th position.
How do you feel? You lived through the Brett Favre experience. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers isn't total apples to apples. It's year two for him, but he's coming off major injury, all that. What are your thoughts on the Jets?
I just hope he stays healthy. I want to see
what it can be.
Sure.
We saw what it wasn't without him. So let's give it a chance, you know, willing that he stays healthy, and we get to see the best possible outcome of that situation.
And we were talking before the show, you think it's better for the Jets to go skill position guy as opposed to offensive lineman?
I do. Okay. I think they obviously they took some swings in the free agency, got some O-line depth, some O-line starters. So they addressed that. I mean, they do need to get younger there. They need to get another pick there as well. But if you can take Brock Bowers, who's essentially you're addressing both of those things,
sure,
skill and
blocking.
You can be an extra blocker.
Yeah.
So if they can get him at that 10th position, if they don't move, I think it's a great pick. I mean, we've seen what the tight end position has done in the league
here,
and that I think he fits that bill as well.
All I'll say is I think what you said about Aaron Rodgers is how I feel, is that is it going to work? Is it not going to work? I don't know.
Right.
I want all these guys to be put in the best position. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I'm a college guy, love Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, but when it was clear he wanted to go to the NFL, I was like, I hope he ends up with the Chargers, because I want to know, is Justin Herbert on that Mahomes, Allen, whatever level? I don't know.
Right.
But let's give him every resource imaginable to see if he gets there. And then if he doesn't get there, it's on Justin Herbert.
It's on him, yes.
But if you go hire another, you know, defensive coordinator on the cheap, or an offense, you know, a coordinator that's never coached on the cheap, no. And I do give the Chargers credit for making the big move, making the big splash, spending the money that it took to get Jim Harbaugh. And so it's kind of the same with Aaron Rodgers as well, is whether it's through the draft, through free agency, through coaching, whatever.
Yeah.
Wish him the best and see what happens. I'm not as I get where people are just out on it. I don't know that I'm there. But I think it's, you know, 40-year-old quarterback, Achilles injury, I think it's going
to
be tough. So.
Yeah, I just want everybody to be full strength.
Sure.
I just want to see a great product. So, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, the excitement coming into the year for the Jets,
I know,
had never been that high.
Nope.
And never. And so you get to see that. And now I think that it happened so in such a disastrous way last year. Just, I want to see it as a fan perspective, just see what it looks like. And so that's where I am with it.
Oh, well, we'll see. What do the Jets have? The 10th pick this year. So
yeah.
See if they trade up. We'll see if somebody falls to them. NFL draft again on Thursday. Live coverage here on Fox Sports Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern. Come back. We'll wrap the show. We got a lot to talk about. 4 NBA games today. NFL draft on Thursday. That's all next. Fox Sports Radio.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
Podcast would have taken a left turn. Listen to Rappaport's reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Fox Sports Radio, Aaron Torres, Kerry Rhodes taking you to the top of the hour. What we got? Oh, okay, you guys just got to...
I went to the wrong one.
Okay, you got two headphones there. I didn't know if it was like... you had one earphone working in one and one earphone working in the other, whatever. You but you're taking it up till what time would that be? 2 p.m. Eastern time when Rich Orenberger and Steve Hartman will follow us. Steve and Rich coming up here in just a minute. All right, so we got four NBA games today. First one is underway. Celtics Heat game one. Celtics up 37-25, 9:40 to go. Three more games coming up with the Mavs and Clippers. That's coming up next, followed by Indiana, Milwaukee, New Orleans, OKC nightcap. What game are you most excited about today?
The next one, the Mavs versus the Clippers. Aaron, you don't know this yet, but I'm a diehard Mav fan.
Real quick, you said, are you tight with Porzingis, or you just followed his career? You said earlier you...
No, I know him. We're not, like, tight, but I know him, and we're friends, and I follow him. I want him to have success.
I know he doesn't play for Dallas anymore.
He doesn't play with Dallas anymore, yeah. But I always stayed on the train, and I knew he would have a bounce-back type... career type of situation happened in Washington. He did that, and now he's playing really well with Boston. So, yes. So, I'm excited to see that. But Dallas Clippers, I think, is probably going to be the best first-round series in the playoffs. And so, I'm excited to see that one.
So, you were saying you're a Dallas fan, or I kind of cut
I'm
you
a Dallas
there.
Fan, yeah.
Oh, really? How did that come about?
05, my manager managed the Jet, Jason Terry.
Of course.
And so, I... became friendly with them and through that situation and started hanging around the team a little bit, met Dirk and the guys, Cuban and the guys, as a young fellow.
Sure.
And so been entrenched with them since then.
Wow, the Jet, yeah. Jason Terry. Where's he coaching now?
I don't know. He was doing the G League stuff for a little bit.
He's at Arizona for a year with Sean.
In Arizona as well, yeah. I don't know where he is now, but yeah.
Kind of feels like this is Luka's time. Like, we talked a little bit about Jason Tatum earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Where, last year, first of all, a couple years ago, you trade for Kyrie, whatever. Last year, I thought it was an embarrassing display. Final game of the regular season, you can get into the play-in. You rest your starters for a draft pick that you may or may not get, depending on how the lottery goes.
Right.
But you also got to give credit where it's due, or I have to give credit where it's due, where the Mavericks obviously played very well down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And, Luka obviously played at an MVP level. So that I think that's the one that I'm most excited about as well. Obviously, the status of Kawhi Leonard, as Kevin Wyatt just told us, sounds probably like he's not going to be there, but it's a little bit disappointing. But what do you think it's been about Kyrie this year? I mean, it's just, man. I give him credit because I've been critical of him, but it's been quiet. It's been businesslike. There hasn't been a lot of noise off the court.
Yeah, Kyrie's my guy too. I love him. I love his game. Obviously, he's had some issues in the media, but it's more the media. They tried to paint him as a bad teammate, as a bad guy in general, which he was not. And so, to see him be able to really fully be entrenched into the Maverick way and really just get back to what he does best and play basketball, it's been refreshing. He's been a big catalyst for those guys and a great leader for those guys, which has not been what we've talked about with Kyrie in the last few years.
No, I give him a ton of credit, and I have been a little critical. By the way, David chimes in, says, really enjoyed the show, guys. Great duo today.
Oh,
so,
wow. There we go.
There you go. We got our fan club. What about OKC New Orleans? Because I am a little intrigued. I just think the OKC thing, everybody likes the new, the young, the fresh. And I do think there's something to, Chet's first playoff series. Yep. Obviously, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he might have been in the playoffs that first year with I can't remember, but
the Clippers, yeah.
Clippers, yeah. But yeah. I mean, obviously, this is going to be kind of his national coming out stage. I'm excited for that one as well, just to see, you know. And it's cliche, but a lot of really young guys. First moment, the Pelicans have kind of, they've been there. They obviously gave the Suns fits a few years ago. So a lot of those guys on the Pelicans have been here before on this stage. And I'm just intrigued to see how Oklahoma City handles everything.
Yeah, OKC reminds me of the old OKC team, yeah. Right? Where you had the young guns, KD, Russell. Obviously, I'm getting ahead of myself with this new batch in as far as their credentials go. But I mean, it's reminiscent of that. You know, you had KD, Harden, and Westbrook, and Ibaka as well, and those guys, oh, yeah. You know, getting into the playoffs, and you just have to wait and see. We don't know how they're going to perform, mm-hmm. and I think that's where we are with this OKC team. You have SGA, you have Chet, but you also have Jalen Williams, who we haven't talked about, who's really good as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see these guys get out there as well.
By the way, we do have late breaking news per our NBA insider, Fox Sports Radio, Mark Medina. Clippers coach Ty Lue says Kawhi Leonard will be out for game one.
Yeah, he was out.
Versus the Mavs today. So that is official. Mavs Clippers are coming up at 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific. The Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks, followed by OKC and the Thunder, or the New Orleans Pelicans. As I said, really quick, any quick thoughts on Indiana, Milwaukee, obviously outside of the status of Giannis?
Yeah, I think the Pacers are going to win that series.
A lot of people are saying that.
And I say it because Rick Carlisle.
Sure.
A lot of people don't talk about him in playoff situations. As a playoff coach, he's going to devise a game plan that's going to give them the best chance to win, and they can score a lot of points. And they gave him fits during the regular season as well.
Yeah, and Milwaukee, it's just, you know, I'm not as anti-Doc as everybody else,
yeah.
But it has been weird. And even how he got the job was, oh, he's a consultant. Oh, no, he's got the job now. And it's like, that was kind of weird. And then, you know, they struggled early. Then they got kind of hot. Then they struggled down the stretch. And then right. Giannis is hurt. This isn't a unique take, but not having Jrue Holiday, I think, has completely changed the entire complexion of that team. And just a weird, weird, weird series overall. So really excited for the four games today. Really excited for the NFL draft. All right, a couple quick hitters before we go. Who ends up as the number two pick in the NFL draft Thursday?
The number two?
Number two. I mean,
you said number two or number three?
Number two. I mean,
number two. It's gonna be Jaden Daniels.
I think so too.
Yeah, all the talk's just talk.
You think Drake May goes number three? New England Patriots. You're on the clock. Jerod Mayo, your first draft. Go.
Yeah, no. I don't know.
I know. I don't either. Because it's the Patriots.
I don't know.
You could take Belichick out of the Patriots, but it's still the Patriots. It's still the same culture, the same whatever. There's just no Bill Belichick, so it'll be curious. But tell you what, Kerry Rhodes, we got to go, dude, man. I appreciate this. This was a lot of fun.
Always, man.
Appreciate you. Appreciate the crew, Perfette on the board, producer Bo, who I've never seen work harder than the grind that he put in over the last 2 hours. Isaac Lowenkron and Kevin Wired on the news update desk. Rich Orenberger and Steve Hartman coming up next. They got so much to discuss. That's next. This is Fox Sports Radio.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever
you get your podcasts.